Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And happy Monday, everyone. Welcome to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Daniel Foster of National Review Online in for Jim Garrity once again today. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And Dan, we start off today with a good martini in a way, certainly, that is reflective of the good martini that we had on Friday when we cheered the taking out of one of the most prominent terrorists trying to kill Americans, and that would be Anwar al-Awlaki, the head of the Al-Qaeda in the Arabian Peninsula, at least a major figure there, one of their major propagandists. And we talked about what a good achievement that was and how the debate will persist over targeting of American citizens, regardless of how they are a sworn enemy of the country. Well, that same issue to some extent came up on CNN's State of the Union with Candy Crowley on Sunday. Her guest was former Vice President Dick Cheney, who is still on his book tour to some extent. So naturally, she asked him about this, and he praised the president for going ahead and doing this. He said it's the difference between an act of war and a matter of law enforcement. But he also had some words of, I don't know if you would say encouragement or remembrance for President Obama.
What we've seen is the administration, the Obama administration, has clearly reached the point where they've agreed they need to be tough and aggressive in defending the nation and using some of the same techniques that that the Bush administration did. And they need to, I say, go back and reconsider some of the criticisms they offered about our policies over the years, past years.
Dan, I think it's a fair criticism and a fair way of looking at this, where the vice president is saying, good job, we would have done the same thing. By the way, you're using the exact same methodology that you criticized before you got into office. A lot of folks might say that could sound like sour grapes and that Cheney's just disappointed that it wasn't his administration that ended up taking out some of these major terrorist targets. But in the end, facts are facts, and he's right.
In fact, I think the vice president might be being too nice and too diplomatic here. President Obama ran a campaign kind of feeding into the Glenn Greenwald set of people who are paranoid about the use of American power to protect American interest and Americans. It's not that I don't think that there are legitimate concerns about the way that we capture and kill terrorists. I do. It's just that, you know, it's become a cliche for people to say about one presidential administration, and especially about the Bush administration as it comes to its foreign policy. And President Bush has said it on a number of occasions. He said, you know, when my successor wakes up in the morning and sees what I see and sees the intelligence reports that I see, he'll change his tune about some of the methods that we employed. And sure enough, that's come to pass. Overwhelming evidence is that the Obama administration has continued vast majority of the Bush administration's counterterror policies. And even, as was a source of some controversy the first couple of years of the administration, picked up on the kill part of capture and kill. So there might have been more of an emphasis among the Bush administration of capturing and extracting intelligence from terrorists, whereas President Obama has shown remarkable comfort in hunting these guys down with drones and just taking them out on the battlefield. So I think Vice President Cheney is dead on, and he probably could have been a little bit more forceful even with his criticism.
Yeah, I think that's probably right, because you're right. President Obama, basically, the reason he got the nomination is because he was basically critical of all aspects of the Bush policy in the war on terror, including, of course, going into Iraq in the first place. That's what gave him the upper hand on Hillary and John Edwards and others who are in the race, and he just continued to pile on. So it's
He sounded like Howard Dean in the campaign, and now he sounds like Dick Cheney.
That's exactly right. I guess if you're going to have one methodology while you're in office, I'm glad he went with the Bush administration policies. But a little bit of, I guess you were right, would be nice. But I'm not waiting for that from this president. He doesn't seem to have a ton of humility on that. But anyway, on to martini number two now. And once again, unfortunately for Texas Governor Rick Perry, he's the subject of our second martini in a couple of different facets here, I think, Dan. Number one is this story from the Washington Post about this ranch that I think his dad initially bought back around 1983. And the original name of this ranch was the N-word Head. And of course, obviously, this revelation is coming up at a time that could be politically disastrous, and if the circumstances are right, deservedly so for Rick Perry. But his story is that very shortly after his dad bought the property, he painted over that part of the rock. Other people who have been to this camp on hunting trips and so forth say, well, it didn't happen quite that quickly. And so now it's just kind of a whole mishmash of different versions of how quickly this name of this place was changed. So part of it is perhaps what Rick Perry's thoughts were at the time, something that conservatives point out was Democratic thoughts at the time, since he was a Democrat, but others pointing out that this is the mainstream media once again trying to paint absolutely any type of racist connection to any viable presidential candidate, and it's just the tip of the iceberg as we're about a year away from this thing.
Yeah, it's funny that it's a rock in question, because if you throw a rock in the South, then you can find somebody who, within 2 or 3 degrees of separation, 40 or 50 or 100 years ago, maybe had some connection to something, you know, some part of America's shameful racist past. So, I mean, this is a clear example of nobody on the right, I don't think, is interested in, no pun intended, whitewashing away the fact that there was a long and painful history of racism and racial discrimination, not just in the South, but all throughout the country. But the fact of the matter is, you can't take some accident of history that someone unfortunately named this spot and then I guess criticize Rick Perry's father's janitorial or maintenance skills, I mean, as a, you know, for failing to get to this item on the new camp renovations checklist soon enough. It just seems like really thin gruel to me. I mean, like I said, anyone who's has ancestors in the American South, or if you go back far enough, anywhere in the United States, has some connection to this taint of our racist past, okay? It's true to the point of being trivial. I don't think this sticks or says anything interesting or useful about Rick Perry's character or even his father's character.
It was interesting, actually, that Herman Cain jumped on that over the weekend. I don't know if that was because he's suddenly viable and is looking to further sink Rick Perry. Maybe he didn't know the full story, but it'd be interesting to see if this does come up at a subsequent debate. Given the most recent questions to Rick Perry, I'm sure that it probably will. So,
yeah, at this point in the primary, the opposition research is really in, you know, throw everything you can against the wall and see what sticks mode.
Expect a whole lot more of that as time goes on, regardless of who the nominee is. On to Martini number three now. And Dan, it was just last week where we just got this wonderful slice of normalcy from the First Lady, Michelle Obama, slipping off to the Target in Alexandria, Virginia, one that I've shopped at a number of times myself. And, you know, she was just regular customer, bought some stuff, I think, supposedly for the dogs, and just getting away and getting away from all the trappings of Secret Service and so forth, although they were there, but not in a very formal way. Turns out that the White House actually tipped off an Associated Press photographer to let him know that, lo and behold, the First Lady would be going off on this normal trip to Target, just like everyone else has the media notified when they head to the store.
Part of me is sympathetic with the First Lady because she gets a lot of crap for eating hamburgers. She gets crap for wearing expensive dresses. She gets crap for going to Target. Part of me is sympathetic. I understand maybe she wanted to go to Target. Maybe she felt like, you know, geez, I'd just love to get away to Target this weekend and pick up some stuff for the dogs. You know, who knows? But the fact of the matter is, you are the First Lady. Your choices are going to be scrutinized with a magnifying glass. And you know that, and you know that, furthermore, as evidenced by this incident, the White House is very active in trying to do its part to politicize these things. It is kind of silly if you're, you know, that the planned trip out into normal America, I feel badly for her because, you know, maybe she just really needed to pick up some dog treats. But also, you know, if you're going to try and tailor your public image to transmit this, I'm just like you sort of thing, then you ought to be a little bit more careful about it. And this isn't the first time the First Lady has kind of stepped in it in terms of a congruence between what she says and what she does. And in a slightly related note, I just have to relate that this reminded me immediately of probably the most bizarre and surreal thing that ever happened to me in college. I went to college in Washington, D.C., and I was at the CVS at the Watergate, the infamous Watergate compound in D.C., probably in 2003 or 2004, and I was coming up, I think, the toothpaste aisle, and there was Condoleezza Rice pushing a cart full of groceries and toilet paper and, you know, God knows what else. And I was just, you know, sort of dumbstruck for a minute, and I turned around and I saw a security agent with a earpiece and a, you know, tightly tailored suit concealing what I'm sure was an Uzi. So I just, this immediately reminded me of that leadership of the free world has to get toothpaste too.
That's exactly right. Maybe those Secret Service agents can get a real quick price check for you through those things. I don't know. Maybe that expedites the process. But yeah, as far as super crazy things that Michelle and Barack Obama have done, this is pretty low on the totem pole, but next time, just do it and don't tell anybody you're going there. So, Dan, have a great day. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thanks a lot, Greg.
Dan Foster of National Review Online. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us Tuesday for the next edition of the 3 Martini Lunch.